Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
We've been watching the awful images following the recent earthquake in Nepal, which has claimed over 7,000 lives. Think about that number for a moment. The situation there has been described by several aid agencies as desperate, but one of our own who got caught up in the disaster managed to get home safely, injured, but in one piece. His name's Paul Green. And good morning to you, Paul.
Morning, Ryan. How are you?
You got back alive. I mean, this is quite a story. Tell us a bit about yourself. Where are you from and what have you up to in life pre this incident?
I come from Dublin and I work in the tool hire business, a company called Hire Here. Mm-hmm. While I was away, my brother was looking after things for me.
Okay, and I suppose the question is, how did you end up getting out there? What were you doing in Nepal?
It'd been a plan for years now to go and climb Everest. I was supposed to be there last year, but I had to go to a wedding instead. So luckily, I missed out on last year's disaster where a lot of people died. So, but I went out this year, and unfortunately, I got stuck up in this year's disaster.
So, what was it about Everest that was so appealing to you? Why did you want to go there?
I'm climbing a series of mountains around the world, and the highest in each of the continents. And Everest was just next on the list, and so I suppose it's the one that all climbers want to climb.
Yeah. This is your thing. Do you train for such an event? You'd want to be pretty much in the peak of your health, would you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I go around the world, climbing different mountains, and when you have something like this ahead of you, you know, 6 months or a year previous, it's just pure dedication to getting past.
You come a long way from the sugar loaf.
Exactly, yeah. Well, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, the sugar loaf was the biggest thing I climbed.
Well, that's where I am at now, Paul.
Right. But, you're getting there bit by bit.
I'll get some lessons from you. But to be serious then, of course, out you go then to Everest. When did you head out?
So we went out on the 28th of March, and it's a slow process. It takes about 2 weeks to walk into base camp. You have to go in very slowly in order to get your body acclimatized. So when you arrive in base camp, you know, you're fit and you're strong and you're able. And then from there, the weather had been very bad, so we were sort of snowed in at base camp for a couple of weeks. But you normally spend a couple of weeks down at the bottom and just doing small trips up. So we had taken one trip up to Camp 1, which is around about 6,200 meters, and we'd come back down and we were... You have a couple of rest days, like every time you do a trip up, just to recover from it.
Yeah, to get used to it.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like when the earthquake hit, we'd just been lying around, just having a rest day, doing nothing, trying to stay out of the midday heat.
So, obviously, everyone thinks about snow, but the heat is intense as well.
During the night, you know, your tent can go down to minus 12, minus 15. But during the day, if you're trying to, you know, you're trying to stay away from the sun, but inside your tent, it can be anything up to plus 40. So that's actually the most difficult thing to deal with.
The extremes are extraordinary, aren't they?
They are, yeah. And like, you know, if you're walking around, you know, in 5 or 10 minutes, you'll be burnt to a crisp. So I spent the entire time with every inch of my body covered, just my eyeballs sticking out.
Yeah. So what time of the day was it for you guys when you started hearing nature making its presence felt?
Yeah, I'd say it was probably around about 12 o'clock. Everybody was just lying in their tents, reading books and watching laptops and that sort of thing. And we'd felt, like over the previous week, like we'd felt the glacier moving, as you always do. And you see small avalanches going off. So we were used to the noise and the vibration, but... We actually just got tossed around the tent very roughly, so everybody jumped out of their tent to see what was going on, and we could hear the mountains growling, so everybody looked up towards Everest feeling that if there was going to be anything coming, it was going to be coming down the icefall of Everest, until, you know, we turned around and we saw actually the mountain behind us avalanching on top of us.
So when you're looking up and seeing that, can you bring us there a little bit, because it's so impossible and so otherworldly to try and get a grasp on. What are you experiencing, seeing, feeling, smelling?
You're looking at the just from ground to, you know, to the sky, just an entire white cloud. Like everything you see in every direction that you look towards the mountain, it's just an entire white cloud running down the mountain. Everybody was looking at it in awe because we're base camp is situated in a fairly safe location, away from the usual avalanche points that, you know, you can watch an avalanche and just watch it fizzle out. So everybody watched this avalanche just come down the mountain, just this massive, massive tidal wave of white snow and dust, really. And as soon as it hit the ground, it kept on coming. So like there might be a wall of 200-300 foot high coming at us. And at that point, everybody realized this thing isn't going to stop. So it's time to turn and run. But at that stage, it was practically upon us. We only had about 5 seconds until it engulfed us.
So did you run? Did you get far?
No, I didn't get far. Like people jumped behind rocks. I was sort of, there was a dip in the ground that I was headed for. But by the time I'd got to us, it had caught up with me. It had just come all around me and flipped me, threw me, and God only knows. Like I don't know how far it threw me, and I don't know how long it went on for. It's very difficult to say in the heat of the moment. It might have only been 10 seconds or something like that, but just the most incredible force. Like if you sort of picture yourself maybe on the end of Dunleary Pier with just a massive wave coming over you, you don't actually know where you are, what it's doing to you, or how long is it going on.
God, almost time stops and yet you're still running. It's like something out of a dream, a nightmare. Is it noisy?
Yes, it was incredible noise. It was practically deafening to a degree that once the snow had settled, your ears would be ringing for a couple of seconds, and then there'd just be pure dead silence, and then you'd start hearing screams and people calling out people's names. But like during this, it was absolutely deafening.
And deafening. What is the sound? Is it rocks? Is it the snow or the you know, what's making the noise?
It's difficult to say. Like I'm imagining that initially it's like I don't know how many tons of snow would have fallen on top of the mountain in the previous few days, and I'm sure it's that breaking off. And again, it's like as soon as the snow hit the deck. And started coming at us, it was picking up everything on the way. So it was picking up rocks, boulders, and the campsite itself and throwing that at us.
So when I was introducing you this morning, I said 7,000 people were killed by this tragedy. And I always think, you know, if to try and put it in context, what is it, 2,000 or 3,000 people died in the Twin Towers when they fell, that we should be aware of the enormity of it and put it into a context. But it literally sounds like collapsing buildings and the running away from them and the noise and the trying to get in behind something to escape. It was just catastrophe, really.
Well, it was exactly. And just like the footage of the Twin Towers where people would be on the streets and just see this massive plume of dust coming at them, you know, it happened in the exact same way. And the figures that are there at the moment of 7,000, like I'd say that could easily double the way Nepal is built and the way the mountain villages are. Just when bad weather comes, it will just wash rocks and mudslides down on top of little villages and just engulf them. And you know, thousands of people will never be found after this.
Take us to the moment where all you heard was silence. If you can hear silence, but you know.
Yeah, like I got myself to my knees and just sort of tried to assess myself, but I could see that one of my arms was about 4 inches longer, and it's difficult to admit to yourself that you're actually injured. I was trying to sort of, my elbow had dislocated, so I was trying to jam it back into place and trying to get some movement out of it. And I then tried to stand up and I fell over because my pelvis was broken. So I had to just sort of stay down. And I could hear all my teammates. We were all in very close vicinity to each other, like within sort of 10 meters of each other. And you could hear people screaming in pain. And a few of my friends were screaming for one of my other teammates, Dan, like I knew he wasn't responding, and normally you'd hear this fella before you'd see him, so I knew there must be something wrong. A few people came, got me. They saw, I was pumping blood in various places, and they just got me, pinned me down, and sort of wrapped me up in a sleeping bag. But like straight away afterwards, looking around with the snow just settling, it was just a horrific scene. Looking back on a campsite that was there 20 seconds ago, and now it was just rock. Everything that we had was just washed away.
You were in a group of 9 climbers, is that right?
Yeah, there was 9 climbers on my team, sort of from Britain, Australia, America, from all around, really.
And any of them not survive? Any die?
Yeah, like my friend, I was sort of the worst injured. There was a couple of fellas got broken or bruised ribs, but there was an American fella, Dan, but he was about sort of 5 meters away from me, and he must have either taken a rock to the head or to the body or something like that. But I initially didn't know it was wrong, and I heard his friends calling for him. I knew there was something wrong, or he must have been badly injured. So it was about 4 or 5 hours before people actually told me that he had died. So the condition I was in, they didn't want sort of upset. He didn't make it. So I'd say it was sort of instantaneous, his death.
Do you think about him?
Yeah, like I hadn't known him before, but we'd spent 4 weeks together, eating every meal together, walking all day together, spending the whole group stayed together as a group. So you get to know people very well, and on previous mountains that I've been on, you get to make very good friendships with people.
Now, if you were my brother and I knew you were out there, obviously I'd be in a state of terrible panic, worried about you. Are you aware now of your family's state of play as this was all unfolding on our televisions?
Yeah, it was very difficult for me to make contact with them. But I know they were able, as soon as they heard there'd been an earthquake in Nepal, they were able to get onto my tour company, and they were able to tell them that, I'm injured, I'm on my way to Kathmandu, but, I'm still there.
But you were alive and well, thank God.
I was alive and well, yeah. But, yeah, they were very worried. So at that stage, it was a case of getting onto the embassies and the insurance companies and that sort of thing, and just trying to figure out some way to get me back out of Kathmandu.
And I think that, in fairness to the Irish Department of Foreign Affairs, when it's action stations, they can be very good.
Yeah, I was through the hands of hundreds of people there, and I met, so many different people from different departments, like the British and the French and all sorts. But I think the Irish came through. They figured out that the Norwegians had been sending a rescue team down, and while down there, the Norwegians decided to bring home any Norwegian nationals that they could find, and me. For some reason, they went to massive lengths to get me boarded onto a plane, stretchers, and they took the plane apart, more or less, just to accommodate a stretcher and put me on it, and they brought me home.
Decent of them. And what is the extent of your injury now? What are injuries?
Well, my hand is broken, my elbow is dislocated, I've 5 broken ribs, I've a broken pelvis. And then internally, the ribs were punctured and lung. I did a slight bit of damage to my kidney and my spleen. But at this stage, that was 10 days ago or whatever. So I'm out of hospital now, and everything's on the mend.
You're made of stern stuff.
Yeah, well, I'd say, I know the avalanche, throwing what it threw at me, I'd say if it had gone on for maybe another 5 seconds, or like if something had hit me in the head, that would have been it. But my body took a lot of beating. But it's going in the right direction now, I think, anyway.
Do you think you're traumatized?
Yeah, well, yesterday was the first time that I got to sort of spend any time on my own. I've continually had doctors and nurses shuffling around me for the last while. So I suppose I may not really have settled in. So I suppose I'll just have to, you know, over the next few days, just mull us over in my head. I suppose, although I wasn't, I didn't know Dan before I went away, knowing that somebody so, you know, in my vicinity didn't make it, it's a lot to take in.
But also there's potential for post-traumatic stress. I mean, that to relive, you describe it so vividly to us this morning. I can only imagine that in the quiet time when you're on your own and reliving it, it's just something you're probably aware of that you have to keep an eye on and watch yourself, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah. Like in the immediate, you know, in the few hours afterwards, we were hearing aftershocks. And while I was in the medical tent, I knew I couldn't move. And we were feeling shocks and feeling that, well, another one's going to come. And the medical tent was in the process of falling down. So I do recall like telling people, listen, you've got to run if something else comes. And then when I was down in Kathmandu, you'd be lying in the hospital and you might hear somebody starting a diesel engine or a van outside the window, and you think that's another earthquake coming. You sort of be a little bit jumpy.
Yeah. Well, that's to be expected. You know, the awfully overused word "awesome," which is used for silly things now, but in its true sense, what happened on the mountain, you describe it as you use the word "awe." I mean, it was something of awe, wasn't it, to see nature in its full rage?
Absolutely, yeah. Like, everybody knows the risks involved when you're climbing a mountain, that, you know, you might get illness or you might fall off or something like that. But when you see what Mother Nature can do in a split second and just wipe out villages and wipe out in base camps and stuff like that, it's incredible what Mother Nature can do when it wants to.
We're very little, aren't we, man?
You know, we are, yes.
We're very little, very arrogant as well. Anyway, Paul, are your Everest days behind you now, or do you still harbour an ambition, or have your family got their hands on you to say, here, give us your passport, you're going nowhere?
Well, that's exactly it. I've been promised to have my passport cut up on me. But, well, like, in my climbing team of 9 people, 7 were there last year for last year's disaster and came back. And I know next year a good few of them will come back, so it will always be on my mind to do it. So the plan is, you know, recover for the next month and then Everest 2016 starts. So we'll see.
Yeah, I just heard your family groan.
Yes, I know.
Obviously not literally, but I can only imagine they're saying, Paul, now forget about it. But look, I can't wish you enough good luck with your recovery, and thank you for making a very foreign story suddenly become very real for us this morning.
No problem at all.
It's good to talk to you. Take care of yourself, Paul.
Thanks, Ryan. Thank you.
Thank you very much.